This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to This Week in Wrestling, Indies and International. I'm Pete, and I'm with Timothy. Timothy, man, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, same old, busy week, busy weekend as always. Super excited. Bought my tickets for Brave Pro Wrestling debut show in San Diego. Really interesting looking card. A lot of Texas guys coming out, especially guys from Booker T's school, I guess, are coming out. Got Jax Dane, but we got Keith Lee versus Desmond Xavier. That's an impressive matchup paper.
Super fun, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that, driving out to San Diego for the first time to go to a wrestling show since I was a kid, actually, which is going to be a lot of fun. And then I think we're going like the weekend after that to spend the weekend with some friends and stay at their place. But for the show, I'm just going to drive just by myself back and forth. But looking forward to seeing that. This is definitely an interesting promotion so far with the card that they put together. They got both guys from the Crime Time. They got the Pope, D'Angelo De Niro. They got a lot of weird, interesting names all on one card. And then just last week, we talked about it. It feels like it's been forever at this point, but I went to the AWS show. I have a joint show with Quintessential Pro that had the big main event of Jeff Cobb versus Josh Barnett, so that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, why don't you give us a quick rundown of that, man?
Yeah. So they open up with a women's battle royal for number one contendership on the spot title shot, kind of ROH thing for that night. And they started out with kind of two of the lesser experienced girls, and then Christina Von Erie comes out and she eliminates herself and says that she doesn't want to take a shot against her buddy, which is Hudson Envy, and she just leaves. Well, then from there, Shayna Baszler eventually comes out and just cleans house, destroys everybody the whole time, throws everybody over the second they come out, and then just wins the whole thing, which is like, you know, the booking makes sense in some ways because Shayna Baszler's, you know, such a badass. You protect Christina Von Erie because she gets out of there. She challenges B-Boy for a rematch that night. And then I know that one of the promoters, the promoter for Quintessential Pro, is a big MMA fan. So he's definitely going to push Shayna hard. So that's what they go there. So that match it wasn't great, honestly. Women's Battle Royal, what do you expect? And they're doing goofy kind of booking stuff, but whatever, it's just a way to get the title shot for later in the match established, or later in the night established. Out next is Brody King, a local bigger guy, kind of, people make fun, say he kind of looks like Tommy End. I could see it for sure. He's got the kind of the shaved sides head, the tattoos, the look, but he's a lot bigger, burlier guy, going up against J.R. Kratos, who's a guy that if you pay attention to kind of Tim Thatcher, Jeff Cobb crew from Northern California, he's up with them. He actually went to Battle Arts with Thatcher when he went to go train with Yuki Ishikawa a few months back. J.R. Kratos was the guy who went with them. But this, they never got on the mat here really at all. This was just big hosses clobbering each other. Lots of stiff strikes, big throws, just really nice, solid hitting stuff. I'd probably go like barely in the 3-star range for this. It was quick and kind of had some sloppy spots, but believable burliness and just intensity out of it. Next, we go into Hanina, the Howling Huntress, versus Sage Sin Supreme. Sage is definitely a local kind of legend. No, not local legend, but like a local favorite. Pumpkin Queen, the crowd's into her. The Howling Huntress, she's done, I think, some ROH. She was in Chikara as Satomura at a time. Definitely kind of plays off of her looks. She's definitely really endowed and pretty girl in great shape. Not necessarily a great worker, not necessarily a great match here. From there, they go into the tag team title match. B-Boy and Little Cholo, who's Mr. Cisco from Lucha Underground, going up against Mariachi Loco and SoCal Crazy, who are both also, or actually Mariachi Loco, who's also from Lucha Underground, and SoCal Crazy is a San Diego guy who comes out to Los Angeles pretty regularly now. This was a great match for the story. B-Boy and Little Cholo really kind of played off of their kind of built in overness. They didn't have to like do a lot. They played off the stick and the crowd reacted to everything big and bought into everything going on. They did a great job putting over Mariachi Loco and SoCal Crazy by the end, made the team really feel good, and they win the titles that B-Boy and Loco have held for, or B-Boy and Little Cholo have held for like almost 2 years at this point. They drop the titles to them and make it feel like a big deal, so I thought that was really impressive. Davey Boy Smith versus Ray Rosa. I mean, this was all about Davey Boy Smith showing off his... And, I mean, we are going to review a match of his later. It's really... He's kind of changed, I think, his style on the indies. He was going a little bit more into the MMA stuff. Feels like he's really focusing a lot more on just playing off his size, brawling, battling around the rings. He shows off a little bit of his technique, but not a lot. Ray Rosas really bumps and sells for him great. Ray Rosas has got the manager on the outside, his whole hate group together, and they're kind of playing off that shtick. And he definitely plays the chicken shit heel against this big walking tall babyface super well. Gets some heat, works over the leg, stuff like that, but nothing crazy. And just kind of a quick match in and out. Tyler Bateman versus Tito Escondido. Tyler Bateman, just fantastic wrestler, great footwork. He's a guy who's always in the right position. Solid charisma. You could definitely get behind him in everything he does. Tito Escondido, good worker, but looked a little out of shape, a little gassed here. Definitely looked a little raggedy, and the match ends up going to a no DQ with a bunch of fuck bullshit with the referee, even Justin Borden involved. Kind of not what I want to see you do with your world champion on a card like this, but I guess with this show and the main event and everything going on, they didn't think that the champion needed to necessarily be a focal point in the match, playing off that they're going to do a six-man tag at the next show with Bateman and Brody King and JR Kratos, who wrestled each other earlier, going against the hate team. Tito Escondido, Ray Rosas, and I'm not even sure exactly who they're going to do. But that, you know, that was just kind of building up to the next show. Then you get what I think could have ended up being probably the best match on the show. Hudson Envy versus Shayna Baszler. These girls just, they both can work grappling. They both hit work hard strikes. Hudson Envy's selling the recently just kind of healed, still injured shoulder. Shayna's all over it the whole way. Just kicking and striking and just really picking her apart. Just kind of destroying the arm the whole way through. We go to the end, and the referee gets... Shayna just kicks the referee in the head because he's been kind of annoyingly breaking her up when she's in the middle of stuff the whole way through. Another ref comes out as Shayna has the arm kind of locked, and Hudson taps out. Referee says it's over, and then they pull the kind of instant dusty finish and say, no, the original ref calls for the DQ. Hudson keeps the title, but good match and definitely one that you want to see the return match, possibly, you know, have this turn into a no DQ match in the future, maybe some kind of submission I quit thing just to play off of the injury and everything. So cool, good stuff there. Thunder Rosa's Leva Bates, it's what you'd expect. They come out dressed like Star Wars characters. Leva Bates is an Ewok, and Thunder Rosa is Darth Maul, and it's all just shtick and comedy, and I could have done without it, especially at this point in the show. Really felt like the show was starting to drag with so many matches, even though they were quick, and I think they could have skipped this match in general. I kept forgetting Leva Bates was even on the card, so I could have done without this. B-Boy versus Christina Von Erie, playing off of their last match. B-Boy is kind of disrespectful towards her to the beginning, and she earns his respect all the way through. Really kind of solid match in, to show that off, that he's kind of dismissive asshole, much better than her. He still gets the win, but by the end he's willing to shake hands with her after he wouldn't do it in the beginning, and I think they really did a good job playing off that hard hitting. And there's a couple guys sitting in front of us that were arguing about the fact that, you know, she's a woman, so she should be already getting beat up and it should just be over in a minute. And I think that they did a really good job here, though, telling that story of an intergender match. There was nothing creepy, nothing weird. It was just about the size differential and the respect and her earning his respect all the way through. So I think they did a good job playing that up. And then the main event, I definitely say match of the year contender match. You got Jeff Cobb with JR Kratos in his corner. You got Josh Barnett with Shayna Baszler in his. I mean, this was Pancration style match. I mean, these guys were shooting on each other. They made every big throw mean a ton. So that every time someone peels off some kind of German suplex after all the tension and all the work that it took to get it, it felt like a big fucking deal. Huge spots. Nasty looking shoot powerbomb at one point from Josh Barnett that just looks like it kills Cobb, but he doesn't end up getting the win. You got Barnett looking for leg bars, knee bars throughout. You got Cobb again. I think it's a very interesting dynamic when you put Cobb in with these guys with the MMA, jiu-jitsu backgrounds, that Cobb may be a better grappler on the mat, but his submission defense and his submissions himself doesn't lend itself to finishes. So while the other guys are looking for holds, looking for knee bars, looking for arm bars, looking for chokes, Cobb is constantly having to kind of grapple, get out of the submission attempts, and then he's looking for throws. And, you know, when you're wrestling another fine, you know, really good level grappler, suplexes aren't going to finish matches. You need your submission game stepped up. So I like that dynamic and that psychology. Josh Barnett gets the win, gets the submission. I think it was with the knee bar after all was said and done. And really great thing. Like I said, this match is definitely one to go check out. Match of the year contender stuff. With the matches that Josh Barnett is already having with just a few on the indies, as he's on vacation from MMA for a little while, he's possibly making a Wrestler of the Year contendership case with just the few big matches that he's having in 2017.
Yeah, and then you can find this at Smart Mark Video eventually, hopefully.
Hopefully soon it'll be on Smart Mark Video. I'll have to double check where it is, but I'll definitely tweet out and kind of point out to people to check it out because that's definitely a match that I think is worth watching.
Cool, man, and hopefully sooner than later. And, well, I went to Russell Circus, but hey, you know what? Hey, I don't have to review it. We're going to review it because they have it up on video on demand about 4 days after they released it was over. It's pretty quick turnaround, I'd say. Huh?
Yeah, they did fantastic on that. It was up quick and everything was good. I think I had one little glitchy bit in the video, but all in all, I think they did a great job.
Yeah, same here. It was during the Sammy Guevara match for like 3 seconds or 5 seconds or whatever. Yeah, I had no problem with that. It didn't hurt the flow of the match at all because it was so quick. Overall, Russell, because I enjoyed the show from top to bottom pretty much. What about you?
Yeah, I would say that I enjoyed everything. I think that there was a little bit of repetitiveness that they could have trimmed out. But
like, an example would be like the first two matches. Wouldn't you have broke those two up somewhere else?
Exactly.
I would, you know, having back-to-back intergender matches. I would have had it, you know, one open and then one maybe at match four or something, you know, push it back a little bit, right?
Right, and then even directly after that, the next two matches both started out with brawling around the ring, which I think was just kind of, yeah, back-to-back. You're doing back-to-back intergender, back-to-back start the matches out by brawling around the ring. So I think that there's just a little bit of sequencing issues that they could work with, but all in all, I mean, the matches are good. They just, at this point, it's like just the polish of the show.
Yep, exactly. And then the other thing that stood out for me, like I didn't care for the, we'll get to it later. I didn't care for the Jervis match. I didn't think it was necessary on this show since they already had a comedy match. I'm not a big fan of having two comedy matches on a show. I think it's limited returns. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and the tough part is I really do like Kikutaro, and I think he's a good comedy worker, but when the show starts to get to this length, those are the matches where you think, okay, maybe this should have been earlier on in the night, and maybe it should have been, you know, half the time, and you could have got the same pop out of it that you're looking for here. At this point in the card, I don't necessarily know that it's the right time for it.
Exactly. And then I thought we got a big improvement from Kevin Gill on commentary with Rich Brennan, former NXT announcer. Yeah, he needs to learn a little bit about the talent, but I felt came across so much more polished than Kevin Gill, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, Brennan, I mean, of course, there was a couple little nits to pick with Brennan, but realistically, as you said, comes across more like a professional and less like a joke, and a lot less cringy moments with Brennan than what you get with Kevin Gill.
Yeah, way less eye rolling. I mean, yeah, he got a couple of mistakes, got some names wrong, pronounced it a little bit here and there, wasn't familiar with some of the stuff, but that takes time, and I feel like he understands the basics of announcing. Well, I felt like Kevin Gill came across as a bad podcaster when he was announcing, you know?
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. And another thing, too, is that Kevin Gill's mistakes didn't come across dismissive, which is an important thing.
Yeah.
I think that you can make mistakes and everyone can accept it, but it needs to come across like it's an honest mistake and not that you just don't give a shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, great point there, Timothy. And I thought Lance, again, I thought Lance was a really good color guy, I tell you the truth. I thought he added a lot. I thought he was funny when he needed to be. And I thought he was good. What about you?
Yeah, this show was the show where I kind of actually said, I mean, maybe it's because he had a better dance partner, but yeah. I was actually thinking to myself, geez, I kind of feel bad for Wrestle Circus when Lance starts wrestling again. Because I don't know what they're going to do to fill in for him on commentary.
I have under good sources. They have a guy they've lined up who's supposed to be pretty great. So okay. I don't know. I know no names. I don't have a name. But I'm curious. But I thought Lance has been absolutely fantastic in the role, and it's actually something he seems like he'd be really good at it once his in-ring career is over. The only thing going against him is so damn tall. But you know what? Bill Watts was a tall man, and he was an announcer for years for wrestling. Same with Ernie Ladd, you know. So there's precedence there of tall guys being announcers. But yeah, but Lance is a tall guy. He's probably easily legit 6'4", 6'5". But I really thought, yeah, I don't think he has a whole lot of experience doing it, but man, yeah, I thought he offered a lot on the wrestlers' backgrounds. Knew the history. I mean, there was some hyperbole from him, you know, like an example being saying he thought and if he legit believes it, then that's one thing. I just can't believe he really believes it when he said that he thought the Guevara Morrison match from last year was one of the best matches he's ever seen. I find that hard to believe with all the wrestling I'm sure Lance has digested over his lifetime.
Yeah, no, and especially being a full timer in New Japan for so long, you would think that he's seen some great stuff. But at the same time, as you said, I think he lends an air of credibility to most of the stuff that he says, and he's really good at it for a guy who's just starting out. And the height thing, as you said, just, you know, don't make him be involved in angles. Not every announcer has to get physically involved with the wrestlers, so just keep him out of that side of things. And look at JBL's been doing commentary for WWE for years, and he's, you know, probably around the same height, if not a slight bit shorter than Lance.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, you're right. That's a great example, Timothy. But hey, let's get to the show proper. It opens up with a graphic of Maggie, who I can't remember her name, and God, I'm so sorry about that. She's a lady who was a big fan of Wrestle Circus, big fan of the local Austin indie scene. I know I've seen her a lot at Inspire Pro shows also. She recently passed away, and that was for her, and our condolences go out to her and her family. But the show opens up proper with Candice LeRae versus Ethan Page, and you know what? I really like this match. I might even say this might be I'm trying to think of a better opener in Wrestle Circus's history. I thought this might be their best opening match they've ever done. Unless I'm trying to think if Extra Talented versus the Boys was an opener. If that was an opener, I think I like that match a little better. But I can't, off the top of my head, I really can't think of any, but this was tremendous. I really like Ethan Page opening promo. He's such a slimy bastard. And then we open up, and Ethan Page just cheats, and right off the bat, and what a great heel. And just, you know, he beats on Candice for a little bit, but then Candice makes this great comeback and does triple topes on Ethan Page. And then eventually Page settles it down, gets some heat on her for a bit. And then we see LeRae with this really cool submission move. I thought Paige was a great base for Candice's high flying. And Candice is really a plucky babyface, never die, fight babyface. So they had a really good natural chemistry with each other. And I thought Ethan Page's post-match promo ruled. I would have liked if if his bloody nose would have played up a little more, or the bleeding was a little more, he captured it on camera a little bit better. But I thought they had a tremendous opening match, 3.25 stars. I was really impressed, and I thought it was one of the better intergender matches I've ever seen. Well, what about you, man?
Yeah, I think that the trope of opening up hot with Candice in control a lot of times can, in a match like this, can feel a bit contrived, but Candice makes it work, and so does Ethan. And the cutoff after everything is said and done with the big tilt-a-whirl backbreaker, just a great cutoff, showing off Paige's size and power and that's essentially it. He's got the size, he's got the power, that's it though. And they do a great job throughout the match as you talk about Candace is a go fight baby face. The other side of it too is that she's smart and she's quick. So it's like she's got the technical prowess as Paige holds her for the delayed vertical suplex, but she's able to kind of counter that into the octopus, and then when he goes to counter out of the octopus, she just uses that again, uses the momentum and locks in the Gargano escape. So it's just, it's showing off her technical side, her speed, her fight, her, you know, her determination and everything. So it does make it make sense. As you said, intergender stuff cannot make sense, but when you make sure that the only thing that you're showing Paige has is size and strength, but Candace has every other part of the game down. And then in the end, I mean, it does come down to that Candace just won't stop. She pulls off the quick kind of wheelbarrow cradle catching Ethan, who again throughout the match is just overconfident, overcocky, doesn't think that he can banana peel, slip up and get pinned here, and he does. And I gave it 3 stars. I was a little bit lower on it than you, but still thought it was a great match, and it was a good example of how to do intergender wrestling right.
Right, yeah. And then the next matchup, again, is what we complained about, a small little softball complaint, was going back-to-back with another intergender match. This time we have Colt Cabana and Delilah Doom versus ACH again, the returning Christy James from Japan. What do you think of this one, man?
Liked the beginning, like teasing that they're going to do the ladies versus the guys, only to settle into ACH and Colt. I liked Colt kind of trying to keep up with ACH's speed, but he just can't. I liked ACH gets, you know, huge pops. He goes for the dum-dum stomp, but Colt just moves out of the way. Colt going for the face-down pin was just like a stupid little spot that I don't even know why they went out of the way for that. Lots of wild action everywhere. Bionic elbow from Colt. I liked when Delilah Doom wants to do the bionic elbow, and she grabs Colt's pad, and she even does the bionic elbow, but it just doesn't register, so Colt just hits his own. I kind of like that little spot. You know, it's stupid, but it works for me. It's cheese ball in the match, and her throwing the elbow pad and Colt has to go running after it because he's just so notoriously cheap, he can't let his elbow pad just go. So
that was the funniest spot I thought in the whole entire match. I absolutely died laughing live there. I mean, I was like, wow. Colt went big. He went big. I mean, he went fishing into the crowd for that damn elbow pad. It was tremendous.
Yeah, I thought that spot was just great and really, really worked. So there was a lot of little stuff in here that could make you smile, make you chuckle, and then that spot, as you said, could actually make you laugh. So for like a comedy intergender match, I think they did a good job. I think that the finish was really just out of nowhere, and it felt like they almost probably lost track of time having too much fun, and they didn't do anything to set it up. It's just boom, Buster Call, it's over. They get out of there. They told, you know, they didn't really tell much of a story. This was just kind of junk food wrestling. This was just laughs and jokes and a little bit of action, but not a lot. But 2¾ star for that, because I think it added some levity as to the card. And I think it would have been good, though, as we said, not in this placement, but later on in the show, to be kind of the comic relief. Because when you're starting out a show this early on, you don't necessarily need that break from action as much as you do later on in the show.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I gave it 2¾ also. And I thought Cabana and Delilah Doom were incredible together. I thought they had great chemistry. And I would like, I'd like to see them as a intergender tag team again. And I think Delilah is somebody who Colt could take with him places and get bookings, because I think they're that much fun together. Because they're both, I mean, Colt's just, you know, a comedian. But Delilah, she's a character, man, and she's growing on me. And she's just like, she wasn't naturally over when she first started in Texas and in the Austin area, but man, now she's super over, and the crowd loves her and eats all her shtick up, and thought she was fantastic here. The crowd was super happy to see Christy. They haven't seen her in a while since she's been touring Japan with Stardom. And I really enjoyed how they combined the comedy and the wrestling together. I mean, it was very well done by all 4 people. ACH, we all know he's a ham. I'm sure he was enjoyed getting his ass slapped in the match. But I really thought, I thought ACH, Cabana, Doom really did well with the shticky stuff. And I thought Christy James did a good job as like the straight up wrestler. because I don't think she plays the shtick real well yet. She could grow into it, but I thought she looked good in the match, and I thought she hit all her high spots really nice and brought some action to it, and overall, really fun match. Next up, we got Davey Boy Smith Jr. versus Moose. The difference, I really enjoyed this match, let me say, and I gave it 3.5 stars. I thought live, I thought Moose owed Davey Boy money, because that's how stiff he was working with him. I mean, it was like, I couldn't believe how stiff this match was. And didn't quite come across like that on tape. I mean, he came across stiff on tape, but not ultra stiff. And I thought Davey was just killing Moose with leg kicks and chops. And I mean, just, they were, I mean, they looked vicious. And maybe I was, maybe in my mind, maybe because I was talking to Davey before the show about Billy Robinson, and so in my mind, maybe he wanted to prove a point that, hey, he's a badass too. But of course, that's just in my mind. But I really liked this. I mean, it was a pair of big guys. Davey's kicks were just wicked. We see Davey Boy working the arm, and Davey is just manhandling Moose early on. And I like how Moose goes over and gets Davey's knee and does a nice little dragon screw. We see Davey Boy Smith goes back to the arm. And then we see Davey Boy, he snaps off this like nasty pile driver. I mean, I was liking all this. And then we see him outside, and you can see Moose fighting Davey on a suplex on the floor. So that didn't come across clean. But you know what? I thought that actually enhanced the match to make it two guys fighting it. The only thing I didn't care for was the finish was a little sloppy, and I would have kicked out because it didn't look like Moose got him real good. 3.5 star, though. I thought this was... But the thing is, I also thought I liked some of the pacing. Like, I mean, we all know Moose is athletic, and he throws a great drop kick. I really liked how they built to his big drop kick to Davey and the way he took the big bump from it. There's a lot of things to like about this match. What do you think about it, man?
Yeah, this was kind of an example of what I was talking about with Davey, that he's really kind of toned his style, I think, to suit his size more. I don't know if maybe being on the Japanese wrestling and how I think that they do respect size, but they also kind of respect technique and all that. So I think on the U.S. Indies, he's going more like, fuck it, I'm just going to work as the big man. And I think that the opening of the match, it did a great job. I mean, I even wrote it in my notes, like, this being the first match where they do crowd brawling, and it's these two big beefy guys, and you go right into the crowd's lap so that they can just see just how big they are. That's really smart psychology, and it's similar to what Davey did in AWS. He took Ray Rosas around the ring to start the match. He gets up, you know, if he's right there, right in front of you, throwing these big, hard strikes, you're definitely going to buy into him a lot quicker when he then gets into his match. That said, as you said, I think the stiffness didn't come across as on tape as well. I applaud that thinking and that logic in the psychology, because it guarantee it worked live, and a lot of people bought into the match more because of that. They get in there, and then Davey's selling the leg a little bit, and I do love that continues to be a story of the match. Davey, because of his leg injury, is now looking to use his technique against the bigger, less experienced wrestler, which I love that storyline there too, is that, you know, physically they're pretty well matched. Davey's now hurt, so hey, what can I take advantage of? Well, I'm a little bit better on the mat. But, you know, Moose does answer, looking at the arm, attacking the arm. I thought that was great. The pile driver was just an insane fucking move. And they did such a phenomenal job here, too, not giving anything away. I mean, everything was earned. Everything was worked hard for. I'm also with you. I think that the finish came across a little bit flat, especially the ripcord and the discus. It feels like a disconnect to me. You kind of, one is supposed to build momentum, and then you stop and wait to go to the next thing that's building momentum, so you kind of cut off the momentum. No point in doing both. And I think it looked like Moose might have been a little loopy or maybe a little blown. And that's why, because the spot looked like it wasn't supposed to go that way. He didn't hit it flush, and it did hurt the finish, I'd say slightly. But all in all, I think that they told a real Clash of the Titans type story really well. Impressive skill from Davey. I mean, just freak athlete Moose. And I gave it 3 star just because, as I said, I think for me on tape, it didn't translate as well.
Yeah, I can totally buy into that. What do you think of Jordan Lennox and the Garbage Man?
Well, this is, I mean, we're talking about it, but this is, I mean, it's just such a dumb thing to go after that match started out the same way to then have these two brawling around the crowd for the first thing. And I understand it's a hardcore match, so you want to play up the gimmicks, but I mean, they should have seen that the other match started that way and then said, let's save it, let's start in the ring, and then we'll work our way into the crowd, which I think can work better in a hardcore match, especially to me. I think if you're going to do gimmicks, if you're going to do the weapons as the storyline of the match, then it needs to escalate to the weapons, and don't just start out with the weapons because you're essentially showing your hand from the beginning of the match. They get back into the ring. Trashman plays drums on the can on Lennox's head. Lennox calls for the Sabu spot as the chairs set up, and that's when Leva Bates comes out, and she's dressed up like Sabu, and I do my best impression of Jesus, not John Stewart, but God, I can't even think of his name. Whatever, forget it. It's just like really lame having Leva Bates as Sabu come out. She kind of, I guess this is to like make an excuse for Jordan Lennox to play his knockoff RVD as he hits his 5-star frog splash and gets the pin. And I gave it 2 stars, and it's also probably because, like, I'll admit that on all the Wrestle Circus shows that I've watched so far, the Trash Man stuff has kind of been skipped for me, so I'm not bought into this storyline at all. But I also thought that the match wasn't worked very well, and they ended it with kind of comedy bullshit.
Yeah, you liked it more than me. I gave it 1/2 star.
Wow.
Yeah, but if you're going to use Leva Bates, I thought this was the perfect match for it, where, like, you know, it was just goofy shit. And it maybe, and also had the in the audience, I had the Trash Man's older brother sitting next to me, so of course he's cheering his fucking brother on. So you know, I got to mark down for, you know, for starters, is a street fight or hardcore match, and Jordan Lennox should have been wearing cowboy boots and cowboy pants, jeans, and a shirt. You know, I feel this is where you get. I feel it's a gimmick match. Go all gimmick. At least the Garbage Man, at least he's. He is in a gimmick outfit, so he's already gimmicked up. So, but I felt Jordan Lennox should be gimmicked up a little bit and not wearing his. If I was a wrestler, I'd want to wear crappy ass clothes as opposed to my nice gear that I just got made. Just got made to go into thumbtacks and stuff. I will say on tape, it looked like when they did that double to the. When he did the double tombstone pile driver. At first, live, it looked like the Trash Man kicked out. I'm like, the Trash Man kicked out of 2 pile drivers on tax? I thought that was nuts, but on tape, it looked like Jordan picked him up, so it wasn't like him kicking out, so I thought that helped a little bit here. But yeah, I thought the most important thing was it was a perfect match for Leva, and it was just, you know, just... She's another one, man. I don't know if I'd book her every freaking show because, I mean, there's only so much cosplay that can be entertaining, and it feels like less is more with her. And so, you know, we've gotten. If you look at it, we started off with I think it was Nakamura at one point and Matt Hardy, and now we're down to Sabu. It's just kind of like. We had Sergeant Leva for the Mania weekend. It's just like, you know, and then, you know, when you book her on the show, you're booking her to interfere in a match. And so you definitely don't want to book her in a match that were like, you know, the main event or like on the, that's why one of my big complaints last show was they booked her in the semi-main. And yeah, it made sense to play Jeff Hardy, but I mean, to do it in the semi-main is just ridiculous, and I just think you use her too much. It just, you're just kind of like, okay, waiting for the Leva spot. It's just kind of, it's an old hat at this point, you know. I've been to 6 Wrestle Circus shows, and I've gotten 6 or 5 Leva cosplaying spots. It loses its luster each and every time. It's kind of almost like a high spot that isn't. It's like a high spot that wasn't hit very well, and every time you see it, it gets worse and worse and worse. That's how I feel with Leva. That might be cruel, but that's just how I feel. What do you think of the boys versus Monkey Flip versus Extra Talented?
I thought that they did a good job, actually. Really.
Oh wait, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I got the opening on this one. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Or do you want to go first?
No, I don't mind either way.
Okay, I. I really enjoyed this match. This is the first time I really saw a monkey flip, and I really like them a lot. They're a good tag team. Extra Talented kind of reminds me of the dynamic duo of, not Batman and Robin, but of Gino Hernandez and Tully Blanchard, in that they're just the shitholes, but they're so entertaining, they're almost turning babyface. So they gotta, I don't want to say be less entertaining, but do something, because they're the heels, so they're kind of the glue here. Flip Gordon really impressed me. Again, this is the first time I've ever seen him, and I thought he had a good look, good looking guy, and yeah, I mean, some of his work was incredible. Like his dive to the outside had some serious ups, like prime time, like he's like a step above, like he's so athletic. It's like he's at another level than a lot of these guys. I thought this thing was breaking down. I thought it was a fun back and forth match. Let everyone got the chance to look good. I thought Extra Talented was great at taking the ass kicking throughout the match, and then they steal the victory with a big comeback at the end. I gave it 3.25. I thought it was a fun match. What about you?
Yeah, I think they did a good job debuting the Monkey Flip team. Made both guys kind of stand out. Flip Gordon, as you said, with his just amazing talent. Space Monkey with his shtick. Flip Gordon's a guy, he's getting around. He wrestled out here in California, wrestled in Mexico, wrestled in ROH, wrestled in CZW. Impact. Now he showed up. I think he signed an Impact, actually, if I remember correctly. Now he's showing up at Wrestle Circus. So, I mean, he's getting around, getting a name, which is good, because I think just a little while ago, no one knew who he was. Guy out of a kind of New England, New York area. Really talented. Definitely probably needs to start making that next step, charisma and psychology-wise. But either way, impressive. I thought the boys were really overshadowed in this match, honestly. They really felt like an afterthought, which
you're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, they hit a couple spots, but they really weren't there much. I think that Flip Gordon, Space Monkey really ate up the match. I think they extended.
Yeah, it felt like, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it felt like they were there for the opening shine and then disappeared.
Yeah, and then they came in and hit a couple token spots here and there, but then disappeared again for long periods of time. I think the Monkey Flip spot went too long. I liked it, and I got what they were going for, but I think it went just too long. Extra Talented, yeah, I mean, their character work is great. And I actually think that they did a good job in this match overall playing up the Lucha Tag stipulation, which is impressive, because a lot of times, I mean, trios tag or three-way tags, I don't like, you don't like, obviously. And when they do the Lucha rules, a lot of times I don't like, but I think that they did a good job making sure that it made sense, which is kind of cool. A lot of times they don't do that. The tail whip to the back of the head is, you know, cute, but I like that they also do the super kick to the front so that it doesn't look stupid that the guy sells it. And I thought this was solid, good action all around. Again, Extra Talented, super talented, obviously. Guys who deserve, I think, almost even better than this. At this point on a national stage, I think they should be getting recognized more. 3-star match, and I think, as I said, good way to introduce the new team. But the boys, I don't know where they were, man. This is a weird situation where you just question bringing them out to just put them in this match where they don't do much.
Yeah, no, I'm agreeing. And then the same thing happened with them on the South by Southwest show where they got, you know, punked. You know, it's like weird. And then we get this promo from Extra Talented, and which is setting up a match for Roppongi Vice, which I think should be pretty damn good. What about you?
Yeah, I think Roppongi Vice are really coming into their own. Not to say that both guys weren't talented, but I think that they've recently decided to stand out intentionally by having matches with Psychology and not just being another token junior tag match in New Japan. So I think that them and Extra Talented could definitely put together something special, so I'm excited for that.
Agreed. And then we got Scorpio Sky versus Mr. 450 versus Dirty Andy Dalton. What were your thoughts here, man?
Decent action. It felt like one thing that I think a lot of companies do, and maybe it's, you know, himself in putting together his matches, but they protect the shit out of 450 a lot. They always make him look like a big deal. He always gets so much offense and looks like a badass. And even in this match, it really feels like they're kind of protecting him from any kind of loss. I thought Andy Dalton, though, I mean, he worked his ass off to make 450 look that good. He's bumping huge. He's in the right place for every spot. He's all over the place. But yeah, I felt like the shine was all 450. Scorpio was missing for long periods of time again, another guy. So then that's two back-to-back matches where I feel like part of the match is just disappearing as you're doing three ways this way. The buckle bomb from 450 looks nasty. Goes to the 450 itself, and Kevin Condren kind of pulls him out of the way. Scorpio steals the win. And as I said, I think Dalton was the only guy in this match that I thought looked like he was really working super, super hard. 450 obviously wanted to make himself shine, but didn't feel like he was putting a lot into it. And Scorpio was missing, but I think if you're doing that intentionally to put heat on Scorpio, that he steals the win after kind of laying low for most of the match, I think that works for heel-wise. The match itself, for the action and for Andy Dalton, I give 2¾ star.
Yeah, I went 3, and I'm with you completely on everything you said. But I do believe they're trying to get heat on Scorpio. I think they're trying to get him into a big heel. They want to make him a big-time heel here in the company. So if that's the case, I absolutely love that finish. But yeah, Mr. 450 was all about everything. Like, he didn't do anything to make anyone else look good. Everything was about him looking good, and his dives looked really stiff, and some of the work looked really over-snug. I'm not sure. But yeah, that was... I thought Andy, yeah, you're right. I thought Dalton did work his ass off, and he was the glue to the match, you know. Next up, we got Rachel Ellering versus Taya. I really enjoyed this match. I thought it was a good title defense. I liked Rachel working the arm early. We see Taya reversing it, and she's working the arm. I like Taya on her getting the heat. The only thing, I mean, it was a good hard-hitting back-and-forth match. I gave it 2¾. Again, the finish felt really flat. When I was there live, because Lance Storm was there, because they brought him in, because of all the Storm Wrestling Academy people. I honestly thought he was going to come out for a save, and they were going to be booking a Lance Storm, Rachel Ellering versus Taya John Morrison match, but no. So I don't know why they booked this finish, unless they needed to protect Taya for some reason. I'm not 100% sure I didn't understand it. Why not let your champion win? I don't get it. And unless it's because Taya's from Lucha Underground and they couldn't do the job, but I don't believe that. I just don't know. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, I'd assume it's less Lucha Underground and more AAA. Because I think she's still contracted to them. So okay, their office may protect jobbing and stuff like that. But could also just be her wanting to protect herself. Either way, yeah, I don't necessarily know if the finish was necessary. But I did, yeah, so I think she's still AAA. And they actually just had her win some big title. So that's probably why they don't want to let her job to anybody. I liked this match from just kind of even the onset. Taya comes out and she looks and carries herself like a big time star.
And she does, doesn't she?
Yeah. And Rachel comes out and she's got more of that kind of down home kind of girl next door charisma. And it works really well because Wrestle Circus crowd has adopted her as their own, which I find really interesting because she did have that match with Tessa on the South by Southwest show, and it almost feels like Tessa should be the second generation girl that the Texas crowd loves, but it's Rachel.
And technically third generation girl.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, they love her. They're doing the Rachel E. Ain't Nothing to Fuck With chant, kind of playing off of Chris Hero, and I love that she even does the Chris Hero shoulder tackle block spot where she looks like she's going to do the shoulder block, but then just boots her in the face. I kind of love the little wink and the nod. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, it still works. So I like that. I think the Taya bullying Rachel was great as the crowd really lives and dies for Rachel Ellering here. Rachel's fiery comeback, simple enough that you could just get behind it. Nothing too complicated, too flashy, just real raw boned, just salt of the earth kind of basic wrestling comeback that's super fiery. The big spine buster from Rachel looks great, but the fuck finish hurts the match quite a bit. I had 3¼ here, but thinking about that fuck finish, I probably drop it down to 3 star.
That's fair enough. Yeah, you know, I had a friend of mine tell me that Rachel says this is her favorite place to work. And, you know, I believe it because she gets a reaction. I mean, you can arguably make the argument. She's clearly the most over female on the roster where they just love her. But she's a legit number one bake. She seems more over than ACH, who's from Austin.
Well, and I was going to even say, and I forgot to say it as I'm reviewing, that this match felt like it could have been the main event because of how over she is. It feels like Rachel could take the women's title and be the main event of these shows over Brian Cage because she feels like she's the people's champ.
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. It feels like it's a case of like NXT of a few years ago when you had Sasha and Charlotte and Becky and Bayley, where you had those four girls. It feels like Rachel's like over like that on the Wrestle Circus level, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure.
And next up, we got Kikitoro versus Jervis, who was who brought out Matthew, who I don't know the whole background on him. Obviously, he's special needs. I thought it was a great moment, but I know he travels all over with his father because I saw him over at Mania. I know he's friends with Jeremy Lopez and the Hales Clan. I don't know the whole connection there. I don't know where he is from locally, but I mean I've seen him in Orlando. I saw him at the Evolve shows. In Orlando and in San Antonio, so I don't know if it's a Texas thing or if he's traveling all over like he's one of the guys because I've seen them on TV a lot. So what did you think of the match and all that stuff?
Yeah, I thought that was great. Jervis Cottonbelly, fantastic kind of just baby face that everyone can get behind, feel good kind of baby face. Then Kikutaro, he could really do a good kind of still comedy heel, and he doesn't really do it here, but I would have loved it a little bit more if they had done that. But one thing that, as we talked about earlier, Kikutaro is one of my favorite comedy workers and probably my favorite comedy worker, and a lot of it is because I feel like he doesn't just do funny things. He kind of makes fun of the concept of wrestling, which I think is a little bit more clever and takes a little bit more kind of appreciation for the business to do that, because he takes basic spots and kind of turns them on their ear for the concept. Like, even just little stuff like when he will stop in the middle of a spot and just kind of look at the guy and then stomp him in the head. It's like, it's stuff like that where you go like, that's funny, but it's not like he did something funny. All he did was stomp somebody. But it's funny because it's kind of poking fun at wrestling. I liked Kikutaro using brain chops throughout the match, and I loved the pulling up the ring rope on Jervis, and then he tells the referee, kind of, check it out, see what, I don't know what happened, and then he does it to him. It's just kind of a really dumb thing, but I kind of love it. The boot spot in the corner, again, it's another one where it takes a wrestling spot, and because you continue to do it, that's the joke, is that you're kind of pushing the envelope with it, not that you're doing something zany, but that you're, like, taking a wrestling trope and making it into more than it is. I think the Atomic Drop and the Shining Wizard for the finish, it was a little interesting. I don't know why Kikutaro had to win, honestly. I think that Jervis Cottonbelly could have just taken the win as the babyface that everybody loves, but whatever. Either way, again, it's comedy, fun. I don't necessarily know that it worked card placement-wise, and I actually think that the intergender tag match got over better as a funnier kind of match that the crowd was into, and probably could have fit this position better. One little note that I want to point out, when Dick Togo was at PWG, he had an unmasked Kikutaro there selling his shirts for him. I don't know if everybody who was there knew who it was, but it was him, because he has wrestled without his mask. So I thought that was funny, because I know he lives in Vegas. I'm like, oh, he came all the way out to California to kind of hang out with his friend who was doing the show, and I just thought that was cool. 2.5 star, fine stuff, but nothing amazing.
Yeah, you liked it more than me. I gave it a 0.25 star. I thought a lot of the comedy failed because the crowd hates that ref, and so they got the reactions that they were trying for, they didn't get. Then at least Kikutaro, at least he was able to work on the fly a little and realize that they were going to boo the ref. So yeah, he was able to come up with some creative spots, but it was just like, you know. Knowing we have 3 more matches after this, and 2 of them are, all 3 of them are there, like, you know, the next two I'm really looking forward to, and then we have the main event. It's just like, it just felt like, yeah, it just felt so unnecessary. This thing, I don't know what the official time was on this match, but it just felt really long. And it was like they were going, it was like they were doing comedy and rest, and then doing and it was like comedy was the main forte, and then wrestling was the backdrop, and it just didn't work for me. I'm always a fan of comedy wrestling when wrestling is in the forefront, and the comedy enhanced the wrestling. Here it didn't work at all. They were going for the comedy first, and then the wrestling, and it just didn't jive with me. And then along with the ref being a heel to the crowd didn't work, and I just felt unnecessary and felt unnecessary and long. Sorry guys, but then we got Matt Sydal versus Sammy Guevara. I was looking forward to this. I thought this one or the six man was going to be the match of the night. I personally liked this match better, but I gave the six man a higher star rating. I thought Sydal was incredible in this match. I thought he was awesome working the arm. I thought they did a good job early in the match. Well, let me start over. I really liked how they shined up Sammy early on with really cool dives. I liked Sydal starting on the arm. I thought they built to the dive really well. They teased it, then he finally hit it. My favorite spot, because I hate this spot that Sammy does, where he runs back and forth and puts on the stupid chin lock. I'm so glad Sydal reversed it and went to a hammerlock on it. And it makes sense since Sydal worked, they both worked in the same, Sydal worked Keith Lee the night before in Dallas, while Sammy worked Brian Cage the night before. So I'm sure Sammy did the same spot, and Sydal probably saw it and goes, hey, let's reverse it. And I loved it. And then allowed Sydal to get a lot of, start working, just cranking on that arm and just destroying it. I'm yelling into the crowd, yelling, take that arm home, Sammy. I mean, Matt. And he actually, he goes, I'm trying. And he didn't pick that up at all on video. And the crowd starts dying laughing. Because you forget sometimes these wrestlers have, they hear everything. I thought Sammy was brilliant selling the arm, to the point even in his post-match interview he's selling the arm. I liked how everything went back to the arm on Sydal. I liked all Sammy's athleticism, and I liked how they built to the finish. I give this a legit 4-star match. I really thought Sydal did a great job in working that arm, and I thought Sammy sold it well, but it didn't take anything away from Sammy's athleticism, and they built to a really hot finish. And I loved how the post-match, I love Sydal. They finally shake hands, and Sydal gives him the finger. I mean, I really like the reversal of stuff. What'd you think of it?
I'm right there with you. I give it 4 stars also. I think this was definitely my match of the night. The trio was good, but it just didn't have enough substance, I think. But, yeah, I mean, from the beginning, the feeling out process is good. Sammy's a little shit. He takes a rope break even on a hammer lock, and it just plays into his character. Once it speeds up, I mean, Sammy with the big dive to the floor, and the crowd almost, you could tell that the crowd pops for his spots that are heel spots, but yeah. Then they start to boo out of respect. And it just, it's kind of interesting to watch that happen, as you can see that when he does the run and then grabs the headlock, the crowd pops, but then they boo because they know they're supposed to. Sydal starts riding him around, as you said. He's working that arm, looks for the Kimura. And honestly, Sydal has really become like the U.S. Indies version of like a maestro worker. I really love that from him. I mean, from his series with Will Ospreay in the U.K. to the series with ACH in ROH, the tag team with Ricochet. I mean, he's come in and he's really, I think he's underappreciated for how much impact he's really going to have on wrestling, because a lot of these flyers are learning so much of the other side of the game, other than just flips, but the psychology and everything else from getting in the ring with Matt Sydal. And right here, he does it again. I mean, he's teaching a masterclass, riding the mat with Sammy, making everything mean a lot with Sammy.
I want to back up on what you said there, right there. You know, I honestly think he helped Ricochet immensely by showing Ricochet it's not all about the flips and stuff.
No, yeah, it's 100% true. And Ricochet even talked about just how excited he was to get to tag with someone that he looked up to. And you could just tell that after their long term as a tag team, that Ricochet has really upped his game overall completely. And you know it just comes from getting to work so closely with Matt Sydal, who, I mean, the one interesting thing I always find with Sydal, though, is that I don't think that him and Pete Dunne ever had a really great match. And I think it's just a styles clash that Pete Dunne is that grounded guy. But when Sydal works this style, grounding the Flyers and then using some of his quickness and his kind of stuff as little high spots throughout as the garnish of the matches, it makes the stuff look really good. And again, as I said, 4 stars, you know, Sydal shaking the hand and then giving the finger is a great finish for the match, especially from the peace sign guy. And I thought that this was fantastic. As I said, 4 stars right there with you.
Yeah. You know, did you see that? I'm sure you saw it, where Sydal actually has like a side mount Cobra clutch on, Sammy at one point.
Yes.
Okay. It's incredible. And he's great finding the leg. And this jackass behind me goes to the trash man's brother. He goes, "Look at that rest hold."
Oh, God.
I wanted to go on and punch this guy. Not the trash man's brother. The trash man's brother goes, "Yeah, that's a side mounted freaking Cobra clutch."
Yeah, right.
People don't know the difference between a rest hold. Okay. A rest hold is a Kevin Owens headlock where they don't do anything, okay? If someone puts a headlock on and you're trying to get out, that's not a rest hold, buddy. All right? When Sammy's trying to escape the freaking side mount Cobra clutch, that's not a rest hold. They're trying to show you that submissions can get over. Just because you're a jackass and can't recognize the difference between a rest hold and a actually working a hold, there's two different things: working a hold and a rest hold. What they were doing were working holds, so freaking learn. God, I can't stand people who call rest holds just because you're trying to work a submission. That's like saying, it'd be like saying all freaking, I mean, that's just garbage. I mean, that's all, I mean, that's what become, a lot of the wrestling has become because they're so high spot oriented that a lot of the neat little nuances of trying to work a hold and trying to get the psychology of the story over gets lost to a lot of the people because they're just dumbasses who all they care about is the damn fireworks part of the match, you know?
Yeah, and I'd hate to hear that guy's review of Zack Sabre Jr. versus Negro Navarro, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly, which a match I really enjoyed, by the way. Did you catch it?
Yeah, I loved it. Thought it was so good.
Exactly. And next up is the sixth man, which is getting a shit ton of buzz, may I point out, online. I'll let you talk first on it, obviously, but I mean, it seems like it's getting a lot of buzz online, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they were smart to put this out there for free and let the people sink their teeth into it, because I'm hearing a lot of people that are very much into this match. And what's funny is, I mean, this some kind of amalgamation of these group of guys are kind of taking this whole thing on the road everywhere. I mean, I was just watching some Fight Club Pro, and it was Leo Rush, Shane Strickland, and Sami Callihan in a three-way. And they, you know, it's obviously they don't take it to this level for just a three-way, but they are, you know, it's a lot of the same concepts in the match.
Oh, cool. All right, man, talk about it, man.
So, yeah, I mean, from the start, I love that it's all dancy, good time, and then the Killer Cult have this unhinged kind of streak to them where they're kind of just messing around, so then, boom, they're instantly into big fucking stiff strikes, huge dives. Sammy and Jake are just killing Leo Rush with big kicks. Jake Chris, I mean, God, his dives are some of the nuttiest stuff that you'll ever see. I think he gets underrated as being just such a madman in these matches because so many of the other guys get a lot of love, but Jake Crist is just insane. Dez and Strickland are just like all over the place with big dives as well. I mean, this is just action, action, action. The Tower of Doom spot is like insane with Jake Crist grabbing whoever. I can't even remember. I think it was like Desmond Xavier off the top. He jumps up in the air to catch him into a powerbomb as he's also coming down in a vertical suplex. That's nuts. The killing spree from the Killer Cult is just like what the fuck? It's power. It's assisted pile driver after assisted pile driver after assist for pile driver. And I love that, you know, Brennan says kick out and Lance Archer is smart enough to say he didn't kick out. He had to be saved. And I'm just like, thank you. Thank you that he had to be saved. Thank you that he did not kick out. And thank you for putting that over. Yeah, I mean, the triple dive spot as they all, like, instead of just tandem hitting big dives all at once, they go one by one with the frog splash, the kill shot, and then I don't even know what Desmond Xavier calls it, but that corkscrew kind of side shoulder slump dive that he does that just looks nutty. Yeah, this is just everywhere. I thought the cutter spree out of everyone was insane, and big Jake Chris with the huge assisted kind of, what is it, the Legion of Doom, the electric chair spot with the rope walk cutter is just always nuts, and he seems to be brushing that one, or breaking that one off pretty regularly. And yeah, this was just wild, wild, wild. I gave it 3.5 stars because I really felt that, I mean, there was no connective tissue. This was just spot, 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 but yeah. It was, I mean, this is how you do it. There's almost no mistakes. There was no awkward moments. It was just spots after spots after spots. The setup for the Tower of Doom was very contrived, and I could see someone else saying awkward moment, but I mean, that's a spot that just has to take setup because of what it is. And then I feel like the payoff makes up for the slight bit of waiting for it to come together. And even that, I've seen Tower of Doom spots that were less contrived with less people involved that took longer and came off wonkier. And this one just came off smooth. Everything in this match came off smooth. All these guys know each other so well. And as I said, I mean, people are putting some version of the, or some grouping of these guys on every card now, it seems. And it's definitely always a match that delivers very strongly.
Yeah, I went 4.25. And I gotta admit, I was there live, so I have a live bias. Yeah, I watched it back on tape. But, you know, all my emotions were from live. And I totally agree with you. There was no connective tissue. But it was so much fucking fun live. The crowd was just insane. And that's the other thing. Like, it's not just a knock against Wrestle Circus. It's like a knock against 95% of wrestling promotions. Is they just haven't got the audio right with the crowd and the announcers. The announcers are still a little loud, and they drown the crowd out. So you don't realize how nuclear the crowd was for this whole entire match. And they were just insanely nuclear. Every spot hit big. They got huge reactions on things. It was go, 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 go. It almost like kind of reminded me, this was like an incredible high spot, wild brawl all in one, rolled up in one. You have, I feel like Callahan and Dave and Jake Crist are like the, I feel like they're like this generation's Freebirds with a fresh coat of paint. And I felt like the freaking Strickland, Xavier, and Rush were like kind of like your Black Von Erichs in a way. And I mean, it was everyone was so over, and it was just so much fun. And I gave it 4.25. I was just enthralled in this match live. It was like fireworks to the nth power. But I will say, Seidel and Guevara had much more heart in that match than this match did. But man, it was just, I mean, sometimes when you go balls to the wall and go all out, it connects. And that's what they did here. They went all out, and I thought they knocked it out of the park. Then we got Brian Cage and John Morrison. I thought Morrison's heel work was really good in this match, and I thought he was fantastic. I loved where he threw his shirt to the lady, and the crowd's yelling, throw it back, and she wouldn't, and so he's doing like the, you know, like he's the champ running around the ring, and I was like his shit talk, I was like him running, like him, I was liking all his character beats, and then you see Cage beating on Morrison, and Cage rams into the post, Morrison getting eaten. You see Morrison, I was really loving the early part of this, and then all of a sudden Morrison slips and almost kills himself on a dive. But he gets right back up, super kick, and they go, go, go. They lose a little bit. I think, you know, Morrison was shook a little bit, but he did a damn good job still following through. It just felt, I felt Morrison just totally outshined Cage here. And you know what? I enjoyed all the. It was overbooked to finish, but I really enjoyed it. I don't see Melissa Santos doing that too often. So for me, if they're gonna have anyone do it, might as well let her do it. Yeah, maybe it was a little business exposing, but I thought it was what it was, but it was overbooked. It hurt the match. 2 and 3/4 stars. I feel these guys have a better match in them. But I really thought Morrison was really on point here. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think that these guys have had better matches on Lucha Underground with the editing helps them a lot, and we've kind of talked about that before. But this match itself I liked. I liked even Cage getting the streamers in the beginning. He's the champ, so I love that kind of the crowd is behind him. I think that these guys really could have were used with slowing it down a lot more in the start, especially coming after such a crazy, you know, fireworks contest, because I don't necessarily know that they can compete with that. And I agree. I think that Mundo really did kind of eat him up and took up too much of the shine, which I think is a problem when it's your champion. I don't think, especially when it's Cage, who's so big, it's just hard for me to buy Mundo being able to take it to him so easily.
Without him having a second, we could help him set up some of these interference spots or whatever, you know?
Yeah, something like that could have definitely helped. Mundo comes across cocky. Yeah, that spot, he does it pretty regularly. It's similar to Cody's kind of double jump springboard to the floor, but Mundo does it it's kind of just a step off the top into a corkscrew dive, and it always looks reckless, and right here it seems to come back and kind of bite him in the ass as he almost dies. But then from there, I think Cage with the middle rope springboard DDT was great. And I did actually enjoy this match, even though it probably sounds kind of like I'm saying I don't. One big issue that I had, though, and this is Rich Brennan. We talked about it earlier, and I think it's the one nit I want to pick on Rich Brennan for the whole show, really, is that he's talking about Cage and just how impressive he is because he's able to do all of this stuff and he's so big. But then he says, but that's wrestling now. There's so many guys that could do. And I was kind of like, yeah, but this is your guys' guy and this is your champion. So stop at the end of that, or don't say that, but or at least take a second to go, yeah, there's a bunch of other guys that kind of do the similar thing, but Cage is the number one and no one comes close to him.
Yeah.
And no one's as big as him. And you know what I mean? Because it really felt like you started out by complimenting him and then you buried it by just going, oh, yeah, there's a lot of guys like that. No, just, could have done without that. Match breaks down. Referee's knocked out. Santos gets in there. I like that even with all the shenanigans, Cage does get the pin pretty clean with the Weapon X, and it's over. And so even though I did say I think that Rachel could have main evented over this, I think that because it's the fuck finish and you get the more kind of clean finish here, I think that makes more sense to put this at the end. I gave it 3 stars. I thought both guys did really well here, but as you said, I think that they have better matches in them.
Yeah, no, I read it, Meltzer, whoever reviewed it for Meltzer, it was either, I'm guessing it was either Lance, which I don't think it was, I think it was Ed in San Antonio, did a little write-up, and Meltzer, you know, repeated what he wrote, and said that the finish here, Melissa Santos looked pretty sloppy. I thought she took hard bumps, and I thought her Conorana looked good. I didn't see anything, I didn't think what that was sloppy looking. Did you?
No, I wouldn't expect more from her either. She's not a wrestler, and you don't necessarily want the ring announcer getting into the ring and outshining wrestlers, do you?
No, and I thought her bumps
but it looked
strong.
Fine.
I thought she legit got hurt, because I mean Johnny Morrison. I mean she took hard bumps, man. I'm sitting front row. You don't pick up on it much on the tape, but live, man, you know, those bumps she took were pretty strong, and they looked like they hurt. So I give her credit. I don't know why you'd say it looks sloppy. I didn't think the work was sloppy at all. I thought it was what it was needed to be and stuff with what it was. It was a contrived spot, but I actually enjoyed it because you don't see her doing it often ever, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly.
I mean, I know it's happened before. I'm not saying it's not ever happened, but it's the first time I've seen it happen. So for me, it worked. So, I have to give it a pretty easy thumbs up show, though. What about you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I definitely recommend watching this. Watching the show. I liked it a lot for a comeback after the South by Southwest show that I wasn't necessarily super high on. And And I think that, yeah, there was, like, we're getting to the point where the issue with the Wrestle Circus is maybe the card sequencing and maybe the length of the shows a little bit, but all in all, I mean, everything's delivering pretty solidly.
Yeah, I mean, that's just called gaining experience, you know? I mean, you know, it's hard to, you know, you come up with ideas and, you know, it seems like it's going to work. But sometimes, you know, in hindsight, it's 2020 and you see, yeah, maybe we could have done this. Or, you know, it's easy for us to be, you know, backseat drivers on it. But if you're interested in checking out Wrestle Circus, you know, right now you can get the first month of free subscription. And you cancel any time and you use the code TWIT52. That's capital T, capital W, capital I, capital T, 52. And you can get your first month free. And right now, I think they have four or five shows up there. So, you know what? It's worth it if you're going to get the first month free. And then that also, not only does the subscription is $9.99, but you also get all their video on demands free. So if you're, you know, if you're home on a Saturday, Sunday night, it's streaming, you can watch it for free if you're subscribed to their through the website. So, I mean, to me, it's pretty good, especially giving you an offer to give it free for the month. I don't think you can go wrong. What do you think, Timothy?
Yeah, check it out. See what you think. And, I mean, they're just getting better at their production. There's no, I mean, we talked about there was very few hiccups on this one and no problems with the live stream, which is more than you can say with some companies who have been in the iPay-per-view business for a lot longer than them. So it's very interesting and very much worth the, at least giving it the free trial.
Yeah, exactly. And they're coming back next month with Lucha Carnival. So we might be reviewing that one also. We don't know. You never know. But on this note, why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your...
And we're back, and we're opening up with CWF Mid-Atlantic, CWF Worldwide, and it's their Fan Appreciation Day, and they had a setup where they had pizza and soda, all the wrestlers were out there doing their gimmicks, and they had the arcade games, and really kid-friendly atmosphere it looked like. From my friend Johnny P, he told me it was a lot of fun. Same when I was talking to Dylan and his dad, they told me it was a lot of fun going there. And it looked fun live here. We open up with Darius Lockhart versus Kane Justice. What do you think of this match, man?
This is very interesting here. Is it kind of teasing Kane Justice as a face? It almost seems.
Yeah.
Lockhart's really hated by the fans, and they're getting somewhat behind Kane, and you can see some stuff from like Kane's kind of little comeback flurry here with some kicks and hope spots that it's almost starting to feel like he's naturally putting together what could be a fiery babyface comeback. It was something else to watch as that happened. I thought having Carter on control for most of the match looked good. It was big strikes, and then the facebreaker bulldog from Kane. I think you look at that, and it looked like a babyface comeback to me. It looked like the starts of one. I thought that he did a good job selling most of the stuff. Kane missing the diving elbow, and Darius grabs locks in the Boston Crabs, a great little spot. I think that there was some really, really interesting stuff throughout here. I love that I was kind of thinking about it as I realized this match was for the title. I'm like, God, what is the Rising Generation League? And right around that time, Stutz goes, the Rising Generation League is anybody who has under 3 full years as a wrestler. And I was like, perfect timing with that one. Stutz just hits it right on the nose, right when I needed to know it. I liked Kane kind of counters and gets a head scissors with an arm bar. And again, it's the arm work of Kane is always a game changer pretty much instantly. As then from there, Darius is looking to once again hit him with a funplex. I think he uses that as his finish. And Kane is able to land on his feet, knees him in the face. And I love the way that Kane can sell the transitioning into the twist ending a lot of times. He goes for it. He can't get it, so he'll stop and then just hammer the guy in the head with some big blows. This time it's a big kick, and then he's able to lock in the twist ending instantly. And I gave it 3.5 stars. Thought that Kane sold well. Thought Darius looked really good on top as a heel. And definitely, you know, no issues from him at all. None of the problems that I see sometimes from Darius at all. I mean, here he was fantastic the whole way through and a good opening match.
Yeah, I went 3.25. I love Kane's opening line. I'm not a ref anymore. I'm going to kick your ass. Loved it. I liked Kane with the – I liked him with the leg checks, with those leg kicks. Gives him more of the MMA type of vibe to it. I liked Kane going after the arm early. I love that knee by Lockhart. It was really nasty. That's one thing I thought both guys – brought the nastiness with their strikes and stuff. Kane, I've been critical of some of his things. Like, one of the things I thought is some of his punches sometimes or his chops lacked a little oomph. Here, not at all. I thought his striking was on point. I thought his kicks looked great. Punches looked great. Chops looked great. I thought all that stuff looked great. And I got to say good job. I'm glad you're working on that stuff. I liked how we see that knee by Lockhart, and that sets up the heat, the focus on Lockhart focusing on Kane's back. And I thought Kane sold it pretty good, and they did a good job of that. I thought both guys' the strikes both looked great. And then Kane kick before going into the twist ending I thought was just nasty. And I loved how he was finally able to – he just was dominating and finishing him off at the end. Really good stuff. Then we get this Brad Attitude Q&A. I absolutely love this. I thought Brad Attitude was tremendous in this segment. He carried all these great questions. Even Johnny P's terrible opening question of what's the best Motley Crue show you've been to? Terrible. My Johnny, if you're wondering, is the Girls tour. Where Tommy Lee did drums up in the balcony upside down of the summit. Just if you're wondering. Just kidding, buddy. That's a good question. I loved White Mike's question of how's WWF catering in the rats? Fantastic. Brad Attitude was just tremendous. Just totally carrying it. What do you think of this segment?
Yeah, so much fun, and knowing that it's from the Fan Appreciation Weekend just makes it so great. It's kind of get in line, everybody get in line to get bantered by Brad Attitude is essentially what this is, and it so works. It's such a dumb thing, but it stays within logic and kayfabe, but it also is fan service in a good way, and I love that because it's Brad Attitude stays in character, and it makes sense that he would do this. And, like, he's being a dick to the fans, but the fans also do get a little rise out of, Brad Attitude was a jerk to me. You know what I mean? It's great. So I love it.
And then we get to meet the filmmaker. I don't know, man. This felt kind of eh. We'll see. Well, what do you think?
They really were heavy on the gimmick, and I And that worries me because I think, is that to protect him? Is it that he's not able to talk? Is he not a good promo? Because sometimes if you give a guy a really heavy, heavy gimmick for their promos, it can kind of cover up for the fact that they're not good because they have something to fall back on, is making these puns about, you know, the movie thing is like the whole point of every one of his promos. So yeah, I'm a little trepidatious to see where this goes.
And then we get Papa Hales gets to pick his opponent for Eric Andrews. And my one question to you, Timothy, is Papa Hales Carney or is Papa Hales Carney?
Oh, I know. I mean, Jesus here. And I mean, it's a shoot. He even said it was a shoot. He just decides to go off script here. And I'm worried that Papa Hales is going to get blackballed from all the territories for not doing business. I mean, what? How could you put him on your card? How could you let him into your building again if you know that he's untrustworthy like this?
Oh, God. Tell us about who he picked in the match, man.
Okay, so Papa Hales, after he says he's here to pick somebody who's there to wrestle, and it's not a slight to any of the kids or anything like that. He's not going to give Eric Andrew a night off. And he picks Mecha Mercenary, even though Mecha Mercenary's in the tag tournament and actually wins the tag tournament, so he's just adding another match to the poor guy. I mean, the biggest guy with probably the worst cardio in the company. you know, the match is good. I mean, Eric Andrews is, I mean, I think he tweeted at me on my kind of just question. I wasn't questioning him. I wasn't saying anything bad about Eric Andrews. I was just wondering if he got any kind of directive or help putting his matches together. He made sure to let me know that he does not, and he does it all himself. But
yeah, actually, I think it was aimed at me. He thought I was you.
Ah, okay. Well, yeah, and I apologize, but goddamn, does he do a good job of playing this chicken shit TV champion here? I mean, he works the 10-minute. It's always 10-minute time limit, and he gets his ass kicked almost this whole match, and I love Andrews even trying to headbutt Mercenary, and there's nothing, it doesn't work, and he hits the floor just to make sure that there's no pin attempts, and I love they start out with the lumberjack. He says, okay, well, let's make this a lumberjack match then,
loved it. Yeah, it just added to the whole carnyism of Papa Hales, and he's already going off script, and now they throw another stip at Eric Andrews. I just absolutely loved it.
Everything they'll do anything to try to fuck this guy, right? I feel bad for Eric Andrews. Mech protects himself by just throwing Eric Andrews out over and over again, just to have the lumberjacks throw him back in. I like that midway through, it's, you know, Mech hurts his own knee, so it's not even, Andrews couldn't even do that, you know. I love the, he's so smarmy and so shitty that he didn't even hurt Mech. Mech had to hurt himself, and that was the only way, really, that he was able to, kind of draw out Mech to the time limit, as Mech misses the elbow drop, and Andrews hits the floor right as the time limit expires. And I mean, God, this guy is such a fucking ass. I don't know how he's able to leave with the title again. Just hate him. And I gave it 3 stars for just really compelling storytelling and done really well for a match that, realistically, I mean, barely any bumps. They didn't have to do any crazy spots. They got the crowd all involved. And I ate up every minute of it.
Yeah, I went 2.5. And, yeah, I mean, I loved how they turned. I mean, I loved all the Papa Hales carnyism in the beginning. I loved all the lumberjacks, and I always liked the babyface commissioner, which is like Stutz or Papa Hales at this moment, adding the stip of the lumberjack to trying to fuck the heel over. I like that. I enjoyed Andrew's throwing a headbutt on Mecha, and he ends up hurting himself with the headbutt. I absolutely love that because Mecha's head's bigger and better and stronger. Of course, we gotta love Papa Hales throwing the chops on Eric Andrews, which is fantastic. I loved the Mecha and him just battling it throughout here and stuff. And I thought they did a really fun finish before the draw, as in, was it a finish where they did? No, but I liked how they teased the splash before the time limit expired. I thought it was just a good, I thought it was great storytelling, and it was an entertaining story that they told. But God, yeah, I God bless you, Papa Hales. That was fantastic stuff too. But yeah, these guys were awesome here. And then we get Chuckie T, which is Stokely Hathaway, versus White Mike. This was incredibly fun. That's all you can say. You weren't laughing at this match and having a blast. I have no idea what's wrong with you. I loved White Mike just suplex sitting Stoke all over the place, and then and all these other people went in and suplexes them, and then that little kid
does
a slam to him. He bumps for the kid. Absolutely loved. And White Mike then goes to shake his hand, and he, you know, does the muscle thing, and the kid's there glorying it up, and White Mike goes, "Hey kid, get out of the ring. It's not about you." That was tremendous. I'm sorry. This was hilarious. I mean, I'm still laughing about it. White Mike was so over the top. Fantastic. I have no idea who that skeezy looking gal was with him. That looked like Carolina skeezy, you know, backwoods stuff, you know. I mean, maybe, what's his name? What was the jobber? Hope he's not, Hardcore Harrison or whatever his name is. You know what I'm talking
Hard
about?
Buddy Harrison, yeah.
Yeah, Hard Buddy Harrison thing going on.
Stang.
Yeah, Stang. We don't need that gimmick going. But my gosh, this was so hilarious, great. And, you know, and I love seeing Stokely do this because, I mean, I just on our show previous, I was like, man, I would have loved if Stoke did the catch point, you know, hold wrong, because I think he would have milked it up and been great in the role. And watching him take that bump for the freaking kid was freaking fantastic. And the story of retiring but not retiring, and then saying that the only thing you could be better is if you're black. Stuff was just, I'm making no sense, it sounds like, but I'm just dying laughing thinking about this match. What are your thoughts here, man?
Yeah, I love the referee suplexing
The ref
Stoke,
too, yeah.
And then he suplexes Mike because he's got to be fair and impartial ref, I guess. Yeah. And then Kane comes in and he suplexes Stoke, and they're just inviting everyone. Sis comes in and gets one, and then the kid. And yeah, the kid is just amazing. And I love that they both got Nasty Boy nicknames before the match started. They've got CL Party calling him just sexual innuendo puns. And
yeah,
you're gonna have to go onto YouTube with the non-restricted rating to hear this stuff, kids, because it gets a little raunchy. And yeah, I thought it was funny that the match opened up and Stokely's working almost like serious heel heat. And I'm just like, what the fuck is going on here? And I'm like really questioning, like, why are they doing this match this way? And I'm like, well, I guess, you know, they're in the South and Stokely's not really that well known in this place. So maybe he's just going to work regular heel. And then it just goes off the rails. And it's just, by the end of it, it's just so absurd that everything is just hilarious.
And those suplex bumps he was taking did not look safe at all.
No, he was just taking nasty shoot. And the one from the kid was bad. I mean, all of them were just so bad. And yeah, he's just throwing his body around. The finish with Stokely. So you should be black, Mike. It's just Jesus Christ. This was all insane. I gave it 3 stars again.
I couldn't rate it because it's like 8 billion stars because the lab made me laugh so freaking loud. But as a match, it was just terrible. But it was just so freaking hilarious. Segment, yeah. It's all story and shtick and segment-y. If you just want to laugh at wrestling, this is definitely the match for you, man. It's perfect finish. Perfect ending to a fan fest, you know?
For sure. I can't imagine any other place that you put this match on in CWF, but this was it, and it was fantastic.
It really was. Man, I gotta say, I love that episode. It was tremendous, entertaining, from top to bottom. Nothing besides the artist or whatever. Everything else was, like, to me, a grand slam. What about you?
Yeah, no, definitely. And we'll see about the movie maker or whatever his name was.
Yeah, perfect show to follow up that incredible Chip Day, Trevor Lee final, and then finals of the Canoodle Cup, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's like
totally different show. But
how are you going to follow?
But entertaining as hell, you know?
Yeah, how are you going to follow that? All the buzz from the Chip Day, Trevor Lee match, really? Like, you're just not. And I mean, there's, you know, the taping that just happened that has the Trevor Lee versus Alex Daniels match that now we can all get excited for, but it's going to be a few weeks, you know? So it's like, what are you going to do in between? Well, you get this kind of stuff, and then we'll go into some more storylines and build to it. But that's one thing that CWF does so well, man. They really don't blow their load and just give you a bunch of dream matches. You really got to, you know, you follow a lot of other fun stuff, but the big time work rate matches are few and far between, and it makes them really special.
Yeah, and I gotta say, man, I really wish I was at that fan fest. I'll just tell you that, buddy. That looked fun.
Yeah.
God darn it. Yeah, maybe next year. I plan on getting down there in October, so we'll see, man. All right, buddy, let's go over to NXT time. I gotta say, I'm really getting back on board with NXT. It's definitely feeling, again, more like territory wrestling, you know, except with the WWE, like, you know, fresh coat of paint, bells and whistles, you know, all the lights and you know, the glitz and the glamour that WWE brings to wrestling. But this is just old school territory wrestling, man. Are you feeling the same way?
Yep, and it's I mean, a lot of on this. Okay, so this episode, obviously, I'll just say the main event didn't deliver, but I mean, that's how it the format is exactly how it should be. It's a lot of stuff on the undercard that's just stuff. There's angles, and then there's the one big match at the end, and that's it. And I think that they do such a great job at that, and it is definitely feeling like similar to CWF, but just kind of a step off because it's just not crafted as well, but also a step above in other ways.
Yes. It's just different, but same, but different in ways. And we open up with Killian Dane versus Danny Burch, and essentially, we get a squash here, right?
Yeah, just a squash makes... pushing Killian Dane some more, and I think I feel like Dane has already established enough that he should be kind of out of the realm of squashes, but you know, whatever, that's fine.
Yeah, and then we get the vignette of Velveteen Dream. What you make of this thing?
I mean, we'll see how it goes. It's another one where I always wonder about them reintroducing guys who have already kind of been used as jobbers, but you know, actually, they've shown that they're able to do it pretty well. I mean, we'll get into that actually even with the next match. A team who was kind of shown jobbing before is now reintroduced as way more serious.
Yeah, they're challenging for the belts. Heavy Machinery versus Watson Kingsman. Another squash. And I gotta say, Heavy Machinery was getting over with the crowd because they're weirdos. And they have this weird promo style that the crowd is totally digging. What do you think of the match and the promo?
The match is, I mean, almost nothing. The Heavy Machinery, I'm very interested to see what they can do because I was the one who, on our last TakeOver review, I think I very kind of maybe a little bit too foolhardily announced that I think AOP is to the level where they could possibly, you know, have a good match with a team that's not as good as them and not with another super team. Well, we'll see what they can do with Heavy Machinery because we haven't seen much from these guys really, but they might have something there where I think that the charisma can come through, and you can, if you're able to take advantage of that, you can make it work for a match that the crowd will pop for. The post-match promo, I mean, I kind of love it. I love Tucker Knight being the one who talks while I can't even think of Dozovich just kind of shouts weird shit.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it's weird.
It's kind of great.
But effective, you know, because it's different.
Yeah, no, totally. It completely stands out, and I kind of think, you know, as long as you've got the one, and I think it works.
It's a total playoff of kind of like, it's a playoff of Gary Hart as the manager and Mark Lewin as the maniac, where Gary Hart would be cutting promo and Mark Lewin would be making noises in the background going, ooh, ooh, and stuff. And it's kind of, they've just modernized it here as tag partner as opposed to manager and heel wrestler. And it worked back then. And you know what? Because it's so different and wacky, it probably will work now. And it seemed to, because it got over pretty well with the crowd, I thought. And then we get the DIY promo. And, you know, they're fine. And it was funny. But, you know, the rhyming is kind of eye-rolling. But I still enjoyed it. What about you?
Yeah, the stuff that becomes a little bit too cute with DIY, I always say that's the Gargano side of things coming out. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
This promo was probably his idea.
Yeah. By idea. I couldn't think of anything that rhymed with idea. We get Kona Reeves versus Tommy. What about this, man?
This was really interesting that it's supposed to be, you know, fired up Kona Reeves oh, he's never looked like this before. He attacks him before the bell, and then Itami really still kind of just disposes of him pretty easily. It's interesting that they've got him using the GTS as a 100% regular move now. I mean, I don't know what really changed. It felt like they teased it for so long, and it's not like, you know, Punk was already gone at that point. So, but it's cool that he's using that move, but I don't necessarily know that Itami can use it on a guy this big and have it look good. I don't think it looked necessarily great here against Reeves. And Reeves is another one. I think that there's something there with his size. I don't know if he's quite there in ring yet, but at the same time, like, do you need to have him on TV jobbing so much? I don't know what their plan is with him, or maybe they're just already given up on the guy, which would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, I don't know either. I'm always a fan of if you think the guy has potential, I don't think he should be doing jobs on TV. I have no problem doing jobs on non-television things, but not when they need to see it. But they have such a system, so many guys. I think they also do it to test if the people are okay with doing jobs. So who knows? Then we get this another kick-ass Roddy Strong video part two. Freaking A! I mean, we the guy's crying in it, and oh gosh, what? I mean, how can you not love this video? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, how can you not love the guy now? It's so funny because he got over as such a big time heel, and that's what got him noticed and wanted NXT to sign him, and now it's like everyone has to love this guy, and while you know, that seems counterintuitive, I think you turn right around, and if you can get everybody emotionally invested in him, then the turn will be that much worse. So I just think that this is a great way to really build up Roddy and get a nice big ride out of him as a babyface, and then we'll see where we go from there. But yeah, I mean, this stuff is great, and playing off of his, you know, his ex MMA fighting fiance / baby mama is just such a great thing to talk about, and how he finally has something that he cares about in the world to be wrestling for. It's like, oh, okay, that's why it took him 10 years to get to WWE, because before he was just doing it because he thought he could do it, because his dad wanted to do it, because he just went along, and now it's like, no, I've got a reason, and this is for my family, and that's why I can believe that now, out of nowhere, 10 years later, he's so much better than he was before.
Yeah, and where he goes from there is, well, next segment, we see Rude and Regal, and Rude looks like he doesn't want any match or anything, but Regal is so impressed with that video, he sets up Strong versus Itami, number one contender, and then Strong comes in at the very end of the segment. What's your thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, another one, they play up Roddy. You got the video package to get him over. He doesn't have to say anything here. So if you still don't think he's a strong promo, which I think he's gotten much better, you kind of cover up for it here, because all he has to do is stand there and look like he's determined, and it really works. And I'm excited for that matchup. I mean, it's just going to be a TV match, but they're going to build towards it. To when it happens on TV, it's going to feel like a big deal.
Yep, I totally agree. And then we got the Women's Battle Royal. Man, I thought this was actively bad.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite moment was when the Nikki Cross eliminated Liv Morgan. I thought that was the only thing interesting in the whole match, almost. And then the whole, you build all this TV time and build up all with this great video package of all this women. I thought they did a great job. And then Asuka just murders him at the finish and sets up another freaking four-way. Not creative. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm harking back to when the first kind of women's main event four-way in NXT was put together. And what's the iconic moment was just Sasha Banks on the ramp, standing next to Regal as he says, it's a four-way now, and she just starts screaming and shouting pissed off. And it's like, here, there was no emotion. There was a shitty match thrown together for this battle royal that had nothing to it. And it just really pales in comparison. Now, mind you, the match might be very good. All four girls are very good. But
right.
Where's the drama? Where's the emotion? Where's the logic? Where's any of it? It really just feels kind of slapdash thrown together. And the finish was just kind of bullshit. I would have liked...
And it's the second four-way we're going to have for the women's title in how long?
I know, they just did that other one.
In San Antonio.
Yeah, I mean, that was only a few months ago, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't work for me. It really fell flat, and that's why I said these shows are really built around one thing, one main event angle, one main event match, and when it doesn't deliver, it can kind of really drag down the whole episode.
Yeah, I can see that. I still enjoyed a lot what they did, but yeah, the final segment, it was just like, ugh. You know, and not only was it ugh, they just wasted other segments from the previous weeks building up all this women, and how we, I mean, we were both like, hey, that was an incredible package they did just last week or 2 weeks ago, and then they pulled the rug out from under us pretty much, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I was excited. I really was for something to happen in the division, and I thought that they were refreshed with some new talent, and now it feels just stale, and I can't believe that they were able to do that so quickly.
Yeah, it's so frustrating because, I mean, a battle royal, yeah, you don't need to be this incredible action-packed thing. But what you need to tell a story in your battle royal. And what they did here was, to me, pretty damn lazy storytelling. If they would have come up with something dynamic, maybe this would have worked. But what they gave us was just like kind of like cold duck in a way. So, we'll see. But hopefully next week they'll bounce back and have a better finish of stuff. Why don't we take a break, Timothy? And when we come back, we're going to talk some New Japan Pro Wrestling.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apoitas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And we are back, and we're back from, we're going to be looking at New Japan Pro Wrestling, and they had the show on April 29th, 2017, and they've been splitting up these shows where they spread a couple of the main events around, so it's not such a loaded show, or they don't go as long, and it makes the shows flow quicker, I will say that. Doesn't mean they make better shows, but it makes them more enjoyable show where you're able to get it all in one sitting, though, I will say, instead of marathon 5-hour show. And we open up with Tiger Mask and who's that? Kitamura and Uno versus Liger, Oxo and Cuatro?
It was Tiger Mask, Imuni, and Kitamura versus Liger, Oka, and Kawato.
What do you think of this?
Fine. I mean, I gave it 2 stars. I thought it was interesting that they started out with Tiger Mask and Liger kind of going through their spots. They tag in their kind of beefy boys. And I thought it was funny the way that Tiger would... Tiger was willing to take stuff from Kawato, but then as soon as Oka tagged in, he, like, refused, which I thought was really kind of weird. And then he tagged in his smaller young boy who just got beat up by Oka. And Tiger then comes in and breaks that up and pulls his guy into the corner so that he can tag in, Kitamura, the bigger guy, the guy who got busted for steroids. And then, yeah, I think Liger kind of returns the favor. He's coming in saving. And obviously in the end they have Liger stretching out one of the other guys, or not Liger, they have Oka stretch out one of the younger guys with the Boston Crab. There's certain protections that they do in New Japan, like, you know, he's got the shoot background, possible Olympic competitor, so he's going to get the win with the Boston Crab over one of the other guys, and, you know, it's just the Young Lions selling their asses off, and that was it. I gave it 2 stars.
Yeah, you know what, I was going to say, why don't we just, let's look at these first four matches. I mean, did anything stand out to you the first four matches?
Before we even started, I was going to say, did you give anything on the undercard over 3 stars? Because I didn't, and I don't really care about any of it. I mean, the first match on the card that I care about is Fale and Chase Owens and Omega versus Okada, Ishii, and Yano, honestly.
Okay, let's go right to that one. And we have Okada, Ishii, and Omega, and Fale. Wait, no, so we have Okada, Ishii, and
Yano.
Yano versus Omega, Fale, and Owens. Well, what'd you think of this one?
I think that they did a good job. You know, this match is built all around what feuds are already going. You got Fale and Okada interacting. You got Omega and Ishii interacting. And then you do a little bit of Yano Omega for just to keep up with kind of their little comedy bit together. I think Owens and Omega working together as a tag team is actually kind of interesting to me. I'd love if maybe
I liked it when they did the when they were in the junior tag. I think it was it had been 2 years ago, or it might have been 3 years ago. I really liked them then, you know.
Yeah, so I'd like to see them in the G1 in the tag league this next year, because Owens just recently tweeted out that the reason why he's not in the Super Juniors is because he's not a junior. So if they don't consider him a junior anymore, then they could put him in the tag league with Omega as his partner. I think that would be good. I've been liking a lot the kind of mini feud, keeping Omega kind of busy with Ishii, especially because you know that Omega requested that feud and it's been going well. Wild Spot Fest breaks out. Fale. I don't necessarily think that in a match like this, Fale should be bumping or selling really at all. But I did enjoy Okada struggling really hard to get him up, and then he hits the air raid crash to set up the Rainmaker to Owens for the pin. And I did like the post-match kind of note where Okada is still kind of a dicky, cocky asshole. He goes for a pescado only to get caught and body slammed on the floor hard. So he kind of ruins his own post-match celebration by trying to be a dick. And I gave it 3 stars because I think it fit the story that they're trying to tell well, and it gets you hyped for the big matches coming up on the next big show.
Yeah, I went 3.25. I like this as like an all-action match. I like this as a work rate sprint. I like the angle at the end with Fale. I thought this was added something for everybody and set up a lot of different things. It was really good umbrella storytelling when having everybody spin off into their own thing. Then we had Takahashi versus Ricochet. You know, before we go into the match, what's your feeling on Takahashi as like this Wrestler of the Year talk? Because I always have a problem giving a New Japan wrestler, best in the world type talk, because their output, they don't do enough output as under singles matches. Compared to like a Freddie Aihai, who I think easily has like 7 times the output of Takahashi this year.
I think it really depends. I agree with you on that for the basic principle, but I think it really depends on the level of their output. And I have liked Takahashi's stuff, but I don't necessarily know that it's high enough level to account for how few matches he's really happening or having. I mean, I think last year Kushida was a guy who, even though he was in a lot of
right.
whatever matches, his output for the few big singles matches he was having was really good. And he was also really being important in some of his like throwaway multi-man matches, where I don't see that as much from Takahashi. I get why people are super strong behind him, because he's a guy who really does stand out and has some stuff that's really kind of flashes of brilliance. But he's also like, I hate to say it, but I mean, people, we just had Shibata. We've had Dynamite Kid. We've had Chris Benoit. We've got Will Ospreay killing himself. Let's like step back for a second and just remember, like, let's not heap a bunch of praise on this guy for essentially killing himself again.
Here's another question for you. Do you think maybe, you know, I mean, the New Japan Pro Wrestling has a lot of fans, hardcore fans online, you know, has a big online presence, right?
Yeah.
You feel maybe they're latching on to Takahashi because he's fresh and new to New Japan?
Yeah, for sure. And his social media presence is good. He's playing this weird thing where he posts pictures of him doing odd stuff with the belt, and I think that people get behind that.
Now here's another one. I feel Kushida's last year, or up at this point last year going to the juniors, I thought his output was better than Takahashi's this year.
Yeah. I think by this point last year, we were already talking about Kushida in the conversation of Wrestler of the Year pretty earnestly, and I don't think I have that at all for Takahashi right now.
No, I don't have it either. So I'm just curious. I think it might. I honestly think I hit something where I think it's New Japan has something fresh to a lot of their fans, and I think it's a new something new where they can latch on to.
Well, and it almost feels like Naito. I mean, I hate to say it, but when Naito got hot again, it was because it was something different. And it turned him into this big deal. Now, his thing has sustained because I think his charisma and his overness has still worked well. I mean, if we really talk about it, it's not a one-note gimmick, but it's a pretty kind of two-dimensional gimmick. But his kind of charisma, his natural charisma and some of the other stuff he brings to his matches has really helped to keep him over. So it'll be very interesting to see where Takahashi goes.
Yeah, and the other difference, though, with, like, Naito is, at least with Naito and the heavyweights, they have, like, one or two or even three titles that you can latch onto and still stay over, you know?
Right.
If you don't have the junior belt...
You almost don't exist.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, Kushida, I mean, he's going to be in... He was, like, you know, he wasn't all over the place. Yeah, it's... without the belt, you don't get to be featured as a junior, you know? There's no such thing as... number two junior. You're either the ace of the junior division and you have the belt and you get the featured matches or you don't. And right now, like, Kushida is not in the talk at all about this stuff because he's not getting the opportunities.
Yeah, exactly.
And right now, Takahashi is that flavor of the month. But hey, we got Takahashi and Ricochet, and I enjoyed this. I thought it started off pretty hot. I thought it was super heated. I loved that big back bump by Ricochet into the apron, or into the guardrail, I mean. And then he does it again. And I'm like, okay, wow, okay, cool. So that back bump should play into the story. And then the back bump didn't play into the story at all until finally Takahashi goes back to it later in the match. So at first I was kind of pissed off, and I'm like, what's everyone talking about how great this match is, where they cut a shit can, they set up the back work, and then they'll use it. But finally, it pays off. So it ended up saving it for me. I had it like in the 3.5 range because I thought they shit canned all this back work for no reason. And finally go back to it. So I give him props. 4 stars. Super fun match. But man, yeah, it was psychology. It was a little weird, a little wanky. It took a while for him to get back to it, but I enjoyed it. What did you think of the match?
Yeah, I even noticed some other, like, kind of little issues like that throughout the match that maybe made me be a little bit less forgiving with the final payoff. Because, I mean, from the opening bell, it's high-octane action, action, action. And then Hiromu kind of rolls back in, gets caught in the handspring into the German. And then finally, like, you could tell Hiromu wants to settle it down because his fast-paced, chaotic attack isn't going to work against Ricochet. He grabs a heel hook. And then I'm like, oh, okay, so this is going to be the story of the match. He's going to work over the leg. And then he gets up. He's grabbing at his own shoulder. And I'm thinking, okay, here we go. We're going to settle into this. And no, we don't get any more of that. There's, like, almost no more selling for, like, a big chunk of the match. But, I mean, wild, crazy spots. I'm like, Ricochet's not going to take this sunset bomb to the floor, is he? And then he counters it into the Rana, and I'm like, okay, that makes sense.
I love that. Yeah, that was a great spot.
Yeah, and then, you know, he goes for the dive over the top rope Rana to the floor. Ricochet... kind of, he takes that, and I'm just like, Jesus. Then he catches him again and hits the out of the super senton, just drills him on the floor, deadlift vertical on the floor attempt. And I'm just like, Jesus, like, there's just so much nuts stuff. I mean, Ricochet cutting off and countering the time bomb into the vertigo is another crazy spot. And I mean, this is just bomb, bomb, bomb. There's no selling, as you said, from the back, from the arm, from the leg, any of that stuff from early on. And then, you know, when Hiromu gets the knees up on the splash, he's even grabbing at his knees, selling that. And there's just nothing. I mean, it felt like Hiromu kept trying to sprinkle in little stuff to sell, but then instantly forgetting it, or instantly, you know, Ricochet's going towards something else. And there's a nice kind of strike off by Ricochet that he sets up to go for the finish. And that, you know, that misses. And 630 misses. He takes a Canadian Destroyer. And then, yeah, finally, you know, after everything, Hiromu's looking at the back and working it over, and he hits his kind of time bomb rush finish for the ending. But I gave it 3.75. I wasn't, like I said, it wasn't as forgiving as you, because I had it at the 3.5 range, and then by the close, I bumped it up a little bit, but I guess not as much as you did.
Yeah, I think it was more because I thought they suckered me and did a good job of, like, I thought they shit canned it, but then they brought it back for me, and I rewarded them because of that. What do you think of Tanahashi versus Evil? Yeah.
I'm kind of questioning myself because of this match, and I feel bad because I have been a pretty big proponent of Evil.
Yeah.
And in this match, I really felt like you know, I can't even remember who the quote is, but I'd like to be able to attribute it to the correct person. But the kind of, it doesn't take a lot of talent to go out there and hit each other really hard. I think it's even Lance Storm that said that, or I've heard him say it.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm stopping and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, is that all evil was? Because in this match where Tanahashi, I mean, I'll call it out and like, you know, whatever, I'm not body shaming the guy, but Tanahashi isn't in the same shape that he was even a couple months ago. He's obviously hurt, and it looked like Evil was trying to take care of him and not be super stiff on him, and it felt like that made Evil miss a big-time step. And, like, he's just not the same guy if he can't be stiff, and I just wonder, like, does he have that skill? Is he just not that talented at putting a match together, working a match to where he doesn't have to hurt guys, or at least not necessarily hurt, but have to work stiff? So yeah, I just thought, oh God, that kind of made me question Evil in general, made me question my opinions on the guy. I liked when Evil was grinding his elbow into Tanahashi's face. I liked, you know, Evil's heat was really just kind of boring because all he's doing is throwing little kicks. He locks in a cravat that I thought was good. The senton looks okay, but realistically, I mean, it was just his heat segment was kind of boring. Tanahashi's selling his ass off, but I'm just not getting into it. The match towards the middle and in the end is really feeling like it's pointlessly bloated. The LIJ run-in just felt like it could have done without it, especially because it doesn't really affect the finish in the end. And Tanahashi gets the pin off the high fly flow, and I gave this 2.75 star. I think that the action and the selling was good from Tanahashi, but you could tell that he's hurting. I think that there was some stuff from Evil that was good, but realistically a lot of his stuff felt meandering and boring. The run-in and the stuff felt like it was tacked on just because that's what you do in an LIJ matches. There always has to be interference, and I felt like it went too long, and I felt like it was probably a bit Tanahashi's, you know, I'm the ace, my matches have to go this long guy, and he couldn't have just cut it down to make the match at least a little bit more enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm with you. I felt the match felt flat. It didn't work for me. I gave it 2.5 stars. It just... it just never got out of second gear. It just never got clicking. But then we got Naito versus Juice Robinson. And, man, I really enjoyed this match. I don't buy Robinson at this level. But New Japan does this a lot where they did it with Omega. Where all of a sudden you beat somebody and then they elevate you. I try to elevate you. It just doesn't seem as organic as, like, a lot of other ways to do it. But with that said, I think Juice Robinson is turning into a hell of a worker. It feels like he's combined the best that he learned at NXT and the best at the dojo to make the best Juice Robinson possible. And he arguably could be the best white meat babyface in wrestling right now when it comes to, like, 80s style of selling. And I thought he was fantastic here. I loved, he got a fine little shine early on, but then Naito gets the heat, and he's just destroying Robinson's leg. I'm loving Naito working the leg. You see Juice selling it, but, you know, if you compare it to, like, for example, at the Tokyo Dome, when he worked Cody and Juice is selling the leg, Cody's work on top just sucked because he wasn't focusing on the leg. Here, Naito is on point, and he's attacking it, destroying it, and makes it so much more interesting of Juice selling it, because what Naito's doing is interesting. What Cody was doing wasn't interesting, and that's the difference between, like, I gave this match 4.25, and I can't even remember what I gave that match. A match I barely remember, while this is, like, a really great match. And then Juice is just fighting and fighting and fighting. And all of Naito's, and he's giving him all these hope spots and he cuts off. And all of Naito's cutoffs are just on point and timed perfectly. The crowd wasn't at first into this, but the work really sucked him in. And by the end of it, the crowd is going nuts and are totally invested in this match, which you just got to, because of the work of both these guys. 4.25. Juice Robinson looked like one of the best, looked like a throwback to the 80s when it came to babyface selling and fire. He definitely, man, definitely has a future. I feel this is this match that really was just a match that really put him on the map here. As a potential great worker. What did you think here?
I've complained about Juice in New Japan And my biggest kind of thing is always, I don't know who the fuck he is. You know what I mean? He's this mismatch. Yeah. He curses and he acts kind of like a dick sometimes and he does stupid spots and he dances and punches and he's got the dreadlocks and the goofy gear. But in this match, he really showed you the real Juice Robinson at times. There was flashes where he looks into the camera even at one moment and there's a look on his face where you get the determination. And it was right before a spot that I've talked shit about, the cannonball into the guardrail. He's got the bad knee from getting worked over brilliantly by Naito the whole time. And he stops and he looks at the crowd and he looks over at the camera and there's a determination in his eyes that says, this is dumb, but I've got to do this to take this guy out. And he goes running and charging and he doesn't miss. Every other time he always misses that cannonball, but he gets it here. And in that moment, the feeling, the emotion came through. I was just like, that was fucking perfect. And that's what I've been like kind of wanting from him the whole way through. Early on, the frustration as Naito is rolling to the floor, trying to get away from him over and over again. There's moments where you can just feel the frustration coming off of Juice that he won't just get in this ring and wrestle. And yeah, I mean, the valiant fighting, the selling, the attention to the detail with the knee selling the whole way through, the fatigue, the everything. And they protect his one big shot, which I loved. Another one, I mean, this almost mirrors the Kenny Omega Okada match at the Tokyo Dome in that regard, that the new guy who's challenging for the bigger, you know, big title that he's never held before against a kind of more established wrestler who's had that belt for a while. And they protect his big shot, his big move, and he valiantly fought through it and gave him almost everything he could. And I mean, it's, you know, the heel face dynamic is switched, but it's like a very similar story and it works so well in both ways. And as you said, I think that this strongly, I was questioning it too. I thought Juice Robinson was going to get this challenge. It's going to be over and it's going to feel like nothing. Now I feel like Juice Robinson is a guy that they can go to again. I don't necessarily know that they need to give him the belt, but I think he's a guy who can get that kind of Carl Anderson. You can give him a title shot every year. You can give him a strong run in the G1. You can actually do something with this guy. He may not be the top four, but he can be in that just underneath mix for sure.
I will say I'm super excited about his G1 opportunities because he doesn't get to work many singles matches. And if you think about it, I mean, giving him Cody is like, okay, how many great matches has Cody had? Not many, okay? I thought this was a coming out party for Juice. And I feel like this is like I think the G1 is gonna cement him as a future player. Let's see. Hopefully I'm not wrong. Hopefully I'm right. I feel this is Juice's opportunity to get over it because I think his selling is better than almost everyone that I've seen in like a long time.
Yeah, no, and I think I gave it 4.25 as well, just like you. I think this kind of makes you think of Tama Tonga. Like, I think it was last year, year before, that there was a lot of hype. Oh, can he, maybe he's been hidden in tag matches and he's going to have this great coming out in the G1. But to that point, he was really unproven. And I think that now we go into the G1 with Juice with a lot more promise because I don't think he's as unproven. He's had a couple big singles matches. I liked the Cody match more than you, but even then, I don't think it was great. But this match, I mean, he really showed that he could stand in there and hang. But credit goes to Naito. I mean, Naito is a great worker, and he's had great matches with everyone. I mean, his IWGP heavyweight title match with Ishii was one of the best Ishii matches I've seen in years. You know, and that's saying a lot from someone who is not a huge Ishii fan. So it's just like, Naito was game, Juice was game, and they really produced here.
Agreed. Overall, man, what do you think of the show? Thumbs up, middle, down, what?
If you skip the undercard like we did, it's an easy thumbs up. Nothing on the undercard offended, but as I said, nothing went over 3 stars for me. So it's fairly skippable. But the big matches, you know, for the most part delivered except for Evil and Tanahashi. But, you know, I can kind of forgive that. I guess I'd say thumbs in the middle, honestly. If you're pressed for time, watch the main event and you can kind of skip everything else.
Yeah, I was with thumbs in the middle. I hate to do that with, I mean, I had 2 4-star matches, but that undercard was just so blah and blah. And then Tanahashi's match was blah. Yeah, when, you know, you need I think you need 3 out of the 4 big matches, which are those, the 3 we just talked about, and also the IC tag belt needs to deliver. And not only, so I felt we only got 2 matches really delivered on the whole entire show. So, But I didn't have high expectations for anything underneath. The Okada tag man, multi-man was fun. But, again, yeah, I'm going thumbs in the middle. Just not enough greatness.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Man, with that said, Timothy, what do you got to plug, buddy?
Lucha Undead is officially coming back, as I was just recorded the episode before we started this.
Nice.
So we did a little State of the Brunion, talking about what's been going on and why we've been missing shows, and just talking about life and stuff. So that's back. Look for that over on PTB and Pop. Otherwise, follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Cool, man. Follow me at Titans of Wrestling. Next week, we're going to have TJ McClune on for a bit, and we're going to be talking about the Inspired Pro Show in May that I'm going to. And we'll be looking at also the Progress Show, the latest Progress Show, and PWX Enter the Dragon, along with our other normal TV shows. Hey, catch us next week. Have a great weekend, guys. I'll be at the reception desk, sketching on flesh, my perceptions of death.